This is the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.
The biggest icon in podcasting.
Welcome in, everyone, to this week's edition of the Doc and Jock Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Adam the Jock Straczynski. On today's show, is WWE star stepping away? And Vince McMahon, is he banned from WWE? We're going to get into all of it. We're going to talk about all of that. Of course, this was a wild, crazy week in wrestling as we're on our way to WrestleMania. WWE is getting a lot of praise. Comparisons to the Attitude Era. We're going to talk about all of that. And am I being a little bit too hard on AEW? Helping me break it all down, telling me if I'm a dick. He's the one. He's the only. He is the Doc, John McEnroe. What's up, cuz?
I can't believe it. 1 week away from WrestleMania, it just kind of snuck up on us. I just think that it's crazy just how fast the road to WrestleMania actually does take in terms of just, boom, storylines, matches being made, and big debuts. Yeah, you're a dick, but you're a good ambassador of giving out your opinion regarding the world of wrestling. It's okay. It's forgivable, cuz it was a good week this week all across the board with AEW going to Canada. Even though maybe not a lot of people went to the show, I thought television-wise it was amazing. And yeah, to see how Raw just handled the show in Chicago was like, man, you kind of felt like you missed out, where you get Cody Rhodes, The Rock, and CM Punk all having opportunities to grab the microphone. Oh my God, what a week. What are we kicking off with?
Yeah, absolutely crazy week. And look, this week's edition of Monday Night Raw is getting a ton of praise, a lot of heavy praise for it, specifically with the closing segment where The Rock destroyed Cody Rhodes. And look, a lot of comparisons to what we used to get with the Attitude Era. When I think of Attitude Era Monday Night Raw, I think of storyline to kind of open the show. And that's kind of what you follow along, and that's what takes you along the 2, maybe 3 hour journey to the very end of the show. And then when you get to the end of the show, you are usually left with a little bit of a cliffhanger, something where you've got to tune in next week. So I ask you, was this edition of Monday Night Raw, where you had Cody Rhodes in the middle of the ring and he's cutting a promo, only to be interrupted by The Rock, who comes out and says absolutely nothing to the crowd, but leans in and whispers to Cody Rhodes? And it was a palpable moment. It was a moment where it was tenable. You felt like you could cut the tension with a knife for The Rock to end up leaving, Jackie Redmond in the back to stop The Rock, and The Rock saying, you know what? You want to know what I said to Cody Rhodes? You go ask Cody Rhodes. And Cody coming out and saying, look, he made a promise he can't keep, only for the very, very end. Cody Rhodes gets absolutely destroyed by The Rock. This starts off and near the ring as Cody and Seth run down to help protect Jey Uso as the bloodline comes out. It spills into the back where The Rock ends up bouncing Cody's face off of the entrance doors. It spills to the outside. You got a massive truck with Steve Austin and you got John Cena on the side of a truck, which we can talk about that if you want a little bit of product placement, a little bit of foreshadowing, a little bit of foretelling what might take place at WrestleMania. And from there, The Rock just goes crazy, busts Cody open, bouncing his head off of his own truck. It was absolutely nuts. Was this Attitude Era Monday Night Raw in your assessment?
Ooh, we saw blood, cuz. First time in a long while on WWE television. Man, Cody Rhodes took one. And look, it just elevates the feud. It was something that, look, it's not out of the realm of possibility that a company now that merged with the UFC company is going to be a little more aggressive. And I just think that Triple H was the perfect creative master to usher in this new era. No doubt about it. I just think that when the collaborative meetings are happening and you're asking the question, how do we advance the storyline? Some aggression. You know Cody Rhodes is having some input in this. And I think that when you look at it, each performer that has an opportunity to harken back to things that were working, I mean, who better than to usher in this new era than The Rock, who understood it, lived it, and can have input regarding it. And I just thought the stuff that he said online afterwards was like, listen, I don't care what television producer tells me to cut, when, this and that. We have an opportunity to create some things that are magical, and boy, was it crazy. It made you feel for Cody Rhodes, even though we all understand what the deal is, but Cody Rhodes took a whooping, and I just thought the timing of when Rock showed up on Raw was awesome too. Cody was right in the middle of a passionate speech, then comes The Rock, the crowd is into it. He just walks in, has his message, and walks out, and you saw Cody looking shook. And everyone was wondering, what did he say? All the lip readers online had some funny reactions. So all in all, a very positive week for WWE. And Monday Night Raw was spectacular. It was amazing. And yes, all the marks out there that remember the Attitude Era with Triple H, Undertaker, Stone Cold, Rock, we got a trip down memory lane. It was special.
Yeah, for me, I liked it. I thought it was good. I think this is one of the best Monday Night Raws that we've had in a long time, and I think this goes a long way with setting up what we're getting for WrestleMania. I don't necessarily feel as though it was Attitude Era-esque, but I feel like it's been the closest thing that we've had in a very, very long time. Like you said, we got blood, which is something we don't normally get. Again, I kind of laid out how this started with the very beginning of the show all the way to the end of the show, and that was very Attitude Era-esque. There is a formula for Monday Night Raw, and they generally try to stick to that. But with this one, it felt a little bit closer to what we used to get when we were younger. We've already, like I said, talked about the blood. I thought the behind-the-scenes stuff, the producer telling them that we're not live anymore and The Rock going in for one more, that felt very Attitude Era-esque. The Attitude Era felt – We knew wrestling was fake, but we felt like there was some legit dislike, some legit disdain. You felt like Stone Cold Steve Austin hated Vince McMahon. You know, you knew Bret Hart hated Vince McMahon, but you felt like Stone Cold Steve Austin legit hated Vince McMahon. When he hit him with a bedpan, he hit him with a bedpan from all of us. And this kind of felt like The Rock legit hates Cody Rhodes with that extra little bit that we got. So I think this is the closest that we've had to an Attitude Era-esque Monday Night Raw. I don't think it was necessarily there, but it was incredibly, incredibly close. Now, in the background of Monday Night Raw, you had this backstage segment going on between with The Miz and R-Truth. And in the very, very back, you could see Paul Heyman and Drew McIntyre. They could be seen in conversation. And this kind of played a little bit of a role in what we had with Cody Rhodes and The Rock. And this kind of all ended up playing out together. But now, does Drew play a bit of a role in night one of WrestleMania 40 during the tag match? Or will there maybe a little bit beforehand as we kind of lead up to that tag match? Does maybe Seth Rollins get taken out by Drew McIntyre and leave him injured going into that match? You've already kind of seen them as the night unfolded on Monday. There was a little bit of that dust up between Drew and Seth. But does this kind of carry over into next week? And does this carry over into the weekend where Drew may play a more of a major role in what happens with that tag match?
Yeah, no doubt. And I don't think the schedules have been laid out yet regarding what's going to happen Saturday and Sunday. So it kind of leads me to believe Seth and Drew probably is going to take place on Sunday. And you have an opportunity where this tag match could have an intrigue. Yeah, I do think that Drew is going to play a factor. You look at it and he's been woven beautifully into a couple different storylines. And yeah, no doubt. You have a typical, you know, that'd be funny if they harken back to the backstage where it kind of looks like the old days with the lighting and things like that. It says WrestleMania 40, and then all of a sudden Drew comes in and rocks both Cody and Seth as they're doing a promo backstage. So it'll be interesting to see what the involvement is. But yeah, the layers are amazing. The storytelling has been great. And yeah, I just think that for the most part, it does have the feel that The Rock is getting over. And with the belief that, hey, he's going to make Cody's life a nightmare for Sunday, but Cody overcomes. And that really should add intrigue psychologically to the win. So, look, even though we probably are in line with what could happen, I can't wait to see it and how it all plays out, man. It's exciting. And to see Drew McIntyre be featured in some big stuff, seeing him out there with CM Punk was awesome. and the back and forth was legit. He held his own, and you could just see the villain emerging. And man, Drew McIntyre doing some things. He could do some damage with some moves, a Claymore in the ring or a Claymore backstage, or you know, throwing Cody through some of the equipment there. Oof, it could be wild in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and look, speaking of Drew McIntyre, CM Punk, what did you make of this promo? Because it was unscripted. There were a little bit of guidelines that they had to cover, right? But CM Punk, Drew McIntyre, completely unscripted. Seth Rollins comes out unscripted. And in this, you get some moments that are a little bit uncomfortable, where CM Punk basically tells Drew McIntyre to say Vince McMahon's name. Drew McIntyre does not. CM Punk calls out Jim Cornette and says he listens to the drive-thru. Jim Cornette later on went to social media, posted a shirt of him in a CM Punk shirt doing the clobbering time. CM Punk really kind of pushed some of the boundaries here. There was a little bit of swearing that was allowed with this promo. So again, harkens back to that Attitude Era, a little bit more Attitude Era-esque. But CM Punk, Drew McIntyre, they end up laying into each other. Throughout the course of this, CM Punk does tease a match with The Rock. So I want to know, do you want to see that match with The Rock? And what did you make of this uncensored, this unscripted promo that we got between Drew McIntyre and CM Punk? Because I thought it was fantastic and I thought it was a lot of fun. You got to see two guys really out there operating at the peak of what they can do.
Yeah, it was spectacular, man. Look, first and foremost, there is just a difference between CM Punk now than it was in AEW. AEW kind of made him feel more rugged, like a vigilante. And I don't know, it's just a different vibe. Now it just feels like the natural CM Punk. Basically, it was a promo that was intended to tease what's going to happen when he comes back. And I'm all for it. I think the dream matches that hopefully he can stay healthy and participate in would be great. Him versus The Rock, natural story regarding, you know, what Rock did to him 10 years ago. Drew McIntyre first, obviously getting back at him. So you just need him to stay healthy. You need him to be able to perform in the ring and do his thing. But yeah, to have CM Punk around to do a promo, I thought it was funny that he dropped the reference of a couple podcasts he listens to. So all the marks who knew understood and were laughing online. So I look at it and I say the stuff with Drew is funny. I thought that when he said, I don't need to put another man's face on my shirt to sell it was great. I thought that was a great inside line. I thought the line about Vince was kind of funny. I might have pushed it more. I would have said his name. I mean, I know you can't say it, but you don't have to say Vince McMahon. You could just say Vince. Everybody understands what that means. But I thought that that reference was a little bit edgy as well. So in all, I thought it was funny that he did reference the Roman Reigns interview with Pat McAfee. So the crowd ate it up. It was perfect placement because clearly the Chicago crowd loves them some CM Punk.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you watched any of the online stuff that Drew McIntyre has been doing, he's operating at his Twitter troll game is operating at a whole new level. It's unreal. He ended up going to Mindy's Bakery because they were in Chicago, calls out CM Punk with that. So really, really good. This story that we're going to get between CM Punk and Drew McIntyre should be fantastic. Now, this all hinges on whether or not Drew McIntyre signs his contract extension with WWE.
Right.
As of right now, he has not. He's got a limited time left, so we'll see what happens. I'm assuming he'll get the job done. This is a character that he's wanted to play. This is a character that he's wanted to have a large say in, and they're giving him a lot of runway and a lot of leeway with this character, and it's hitting it out of the park. So I'm assuming Drew McIntyre will be staying with WWE. We will be getting this CM Punk feud. It should be fantastic. Something else that was fantastic was Friday night. Ooh. Friday night, we got to see Jade Cargill. Now, physically, she is so ridiculously impressive. Like, her body is freaking real. Her physique is absolutely bonkers. She cut a promo. It was very short. There wasn't really a whole lot to say there. Jade wants to play, just to give everybody a little bit of insight, Jade wants to play Storm from the X-Men. So the whole thing with the Storm is coming. Her WWE character is going to be very Storm X-Men-esque. She's obviously not going to have superpowers where she can control the weather, but her entrance will kind of seem like that, and her gimmick is going to be Storm from the X-Men. So she said the storm is coming. This leads to the match between Bianca Belair and Damage Control. Damage Control takes out Bianca Belair at the end of the match after she gets the win. Out comes Naomi. Naomi gets dismantled. And then Jade comes down after a prolonged beatdown of the two. And Jade steps in the ring and basically punts Asuka across the ring, hits a couple of moves on everybody else in Damage Control. And in the end, she's left looking incredibly strong. Looks like she may be getting a match against Asuka at WrestleMania. And for me, I thought the really cool thing was having three black women who are superstars and who are physically gifted. Like Bianca is physically gifted. Jade is physically gifted. I already opined about how her physique looks. And Naomi is an athletic freak show, just made out of rubber. She can bend and contort in certain different ways. It's unreal. To have those three women looking as strong as they did in the middle of that ring, if this is going to be a faction, I'm here for it. I think it looks fantastic. I think it's got a fantastic look, and I think there's a ton of power and agility there that can just kind of let your mind go in all kinds of different places for different matches and just the creativity you could get. On top of that, those two, Bianca is fantastic. We love Bianca. Naomi, she's a veteran. She's been there, done that. She's had the highs. She's had the lows. She's done it all, and she's been able to leave WWE and go out and do it on her own with TNA and other places. They could really help usher and help mold Jade and get her to the spot. Jade could be the centerpiece, but she's going to be rough around the edges. These two could really help take some of those rough edges off. I thought Jade looked fantastic. I felt like the entire night was built and set for Jade. What did you think about her appearance on SmackDown? Because I thought Jade Cargill crushed it, knocked it out of the park.
She did. She's got the look. I don't know if I was a fan of the attire. I don't know. It just, I liked what she wore more at the Royal Rumble. It kind of felt mismatched a little bit. I think she looks more better in blues and blacks and darker colors than in red, in my opinion. But listen, we're nitpicking. It was amazing. And the way that she was presented was like a star, a superstar. Now, I do have a question, because online, the IWC, the very vocal and opinionated internet wrestling community, kind of took it and said, wait a minute, just based on how the night progressed, it kind of reminded them of what AEW did with Mercedes Moné. Do you think it was original enough to have her come out in the way in which it was presented? Because I might have done something different. I might have, you know, had her, you know, start backstage. In fact, in the end, when you have somebody as powerful as Triple H, you just have her, you know, you continue to have Triple H back there. She arrives and he's just like, thank you. You know, this is going to be the start of a new era. Kind of like how he did with NXT a little bit more like, hey, I'm showing off like a prized possession, kind of like Dana White does when he's just always around in the background. So you have Triple H just kind of showcasing her around. This is Jade, and have him smirk with the ladies and have kind of everybody like, you know, like walk past Tiffany Stratton and like she's doing her thing. And then Triple H walks in with Jade, kind of to signal, hey, this is important. And then everybody else talks behind her back. She's not all that. What has she ever done? She came from that place. You know, it's kind of like a little bit of jealousy, a little bit of stuff that, you know, could be said, but not said into her face. Like they could have said, you know, it would have been funny if Asuka or somebody would have said something like, she probably needs another 3 years of training from where she came from. And then walking around laughing, you know, stuff like that, a little bit more. But in the end, they made it serious. I'm here. I'm a badass, and let's go. And that's fine. But I you could have did it a lot of different ways, because in my mind, it did just a little bit remind me of what AEW did with Mercedes Moné.
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. But when you say it, yeah, it was incredibly similar to what they did with Mercedes Moné. The thing is, with what you presented, I feel like they've kind of already have done that. They did that before she debuted at the Royal Rumble, where she was kind of walking around with Triple H, or she was seen backstage with Triple H. And nothing really came of it. She's been kind of kept on ice now for months. And I think this was a good way to kind of slowly ingrain her in the SmackDown scene, slowly introduce her to the crowd. Now, look, we had the thing that took place at the Royal Rumble where she threw out Nia Jax, and that was fantastic. But, like, she hasn't really cut a promo. She hasn't really talked in the middle of the ring. And look, when we talk about Jade Cargill and kind of things she has to work on, her promos are one of them. Her promos are not very good. They weren't very good in AEW. I was waiting for her to be like, I'm that bitch, because that was what she always said in AEW. Like, that was it. That was like, that was her line. She didn't say anything else. It was just, I'm that bitch. And they were like, okay, Mike's dead. Now you can move on. So I was expecting something like that. So I think them giving her a couple of sentences to say, her coming out and kind of getting her feet wet. Again, she is somebody who you're going to have to keep it very black and white. You can't have a lot of gray with her, because she's still learning. She's still sitting underneath that learning tree. AEW did a really good job protecting her, did a really good job trying to shape and mold her into a monster star. And she was huge in AEW. WWE thought that they were getting a finished product. She showed up in WWE, was like, whoa, how much should we pay you? And we can't send you to NXT right now because we're paying you too much? Oh, man, we are stuck. So they're taking it slow with her. I think this was, for her specifically, again, case situationally, I think this was the smart thing to do. You give her a couple of lines, let her go say some stuff. She walks down to the ring. She looks like a total badass. She doesn't run to the ring. She walks to the ring. She's like, I'm going to get there at my own time. I'm going to get there at my own pace. And then when she steps in, like, Asuka went flying. Asuka did a great job to sell that pump kick. And everybody else did a great job to sell her moves. And in the end, she stands in the middle, and she looks so – like, Bianca Belair has abs for days. And Bianca Belair has great shoulder definition. And Bianca Belair looks like she could be a figure model if she was to go to the weightlifting scene. Bianca Belair looks incredible. Next to Jade, she looks small. She looks like a child. It's unreal. Bianca Belair looks fantastic, but Jade looks that much more impressive. It is crazy. So I think her being in the middle with Bianca next to her to kind of show the difference, and to be next to a physical freak like Naomi, who is just ungodly athletic, just like crazy, I think this makes her look big. I think this makes her look good. Mercedes Moné was next to Willow Nightingale and Chris Statlander. I mean, look, Chris Statlander, I'm a huge fan of, and Willow Nightingale, I think they dropped the ball with. But, you know, they're not physically impressive like Bianca is. Or they don't have the athleticism that Naomi does. And Jade kind of outshines all of those, outshines everybody that we just mentioned. So I think what they did with Jade was fine. You have to remember, you got to take it slow with her. I think the way they kind of walked her through it, I think it was very, very good.
Yes.
From WWE. Anything else that really stood out for you this week?
Yeah, something stood out. There was a video package with Tiffany Stratton that's made its way online. That I was like,
I knew you were going to go there.
I need to kind of, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that needs to get out a fluffy blanket or a fluffy pool toy and sit on it. But watching Tiffany Stratton hang out in the pool, I was like, you know, I need to do that. I need to stop just being so busy on my phone, doing all these things, planning so many things, and looking at my schedule all the time. I need to just sit in a pool next to her and be like, what's your plans? Like, I want to do a poolside interview exclusively with Tiffany Stratton. Poolside here with the doc of Detroit Sports Podcast Network. We're here with Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany, what are we doing here in this fine pool? And she looks at me like, and just flips it over and leaves. Who sent this tool here? Oh, man, it was great.
Do you feel like, so when I watched her promo, I felt like, okay, this is them capitalizing on what Mandy Rose was supposed to be.
Yes,
not edgy and dark, but more of that glam, yes. More of that glitz. And this feels very Mandy Rose-esque to me.
I don't care. She fits the role, and absolutely. I think she's just, you know, the opportunity to use vignettes and video reels are amazing. Tiffany Stratton is just going to be somebody that also, what's spectacular is we all know she's going to back it up in the ring. So total package, man. And that stood out to me. I thought throughout the week, WWE just really did a great job with the tag teams. Oh my God. Even though it was thrown together with the Jade Cargill match, I do want to see it. I do feel like Bianca Belair deserves more, but hey, you know, a tag match with friends is sometimes a little bit fun that you can take advantage of. We all expect that Bianca Belair's team is going to win. The ladder match is going to be off the chains. I think that there's going to be some special moments. Pretty Deadly getting a win was funny. I just can't help but laugh because I do play their entrance on the video game, and my daughter loves it. It's just effing hilarious. Their whole gimmick is just funny. It's fun. So I enjoyed it. And I looked at Monday Night Raw, and I thought the middle portion was also something that sustained a lot of people's attention. So right now, WWE is firing pretty well on the road to WrestleMania. Good matches. Becky Lynch, Nia Jax, that feud has just been off the chains. And I'm just finding that, you know, the stuff that's been put together, every little segment has something that if you tune in, you can't just be like it's a throwaway. There's intrigue there. Even with the Latin contingent, I thought that they've been presented in a new, fresh way, in a way that we kind of think AEW should do with their people, is that highlight them a little more. Their segments are better produced. Better way to put it. Each person's maybe they upgraded and we're like, you know, we got to start paying these producers a little bit better. I just thought that in terms of everybody getting their time and doing stuff, look, man, AJ Styles has been doing some stuff online that I thought has been great. LA Knight, holy cow, that match. Clearly, it's going to suck to see AJ Styles go have to take one down for LA Knight, but that's fine. Their feud in and of itself, the match should be spectacular. So in my opinion, WWE this week really did themselves well, a week they can be proud of.
Yeah, I thought WWE overall, fantastic. You set up a lot of matches.
Yes.
Going into this week, we did not have LWO, a.k.a. Rey Mysterio, Dragon Lee versus Santos and Dominic. That was something we did not have. That not only sets up a match for WrestleMania, it also sets up a little bit more dissension in the Judgment Day where everybody's kind of scratching their heads, and it always kind of feels like they are on the verge of breaking. We talked about Jade and possibly Asuka getting a match. So you have a lot of matches that ended up getting built over the course of 1 week. And there is some legitimate footwork, legitimate groundwork laid over this course of week for what's going to happen this upcoming week with our go-home shows and what will take place next weekend with WrestleMania. So a very good job by WWE. Somebody who's not doing a very good job, at least in my estimation. And again, you tell me if I'm being too critical of AEW. I thought what we got from AEW this week, specifically with Dynamite, was good. I thought the wrestling was really, really good. We got great wrestling, in fact. But there are no storylines. What's getting moved along? Where are we at? You know, we talk about this every single week with the Undisputed Kingdom. They show up and all they do is take losses. And like they don't even look strong in their losses. So how are you trying to build this faction when all you're doing is killing it by having it lose all the time? Like you're booking it into oblivion. It doesn't make sense. I'm not sure what is necessary. Like, I'll be honest with you. I didn't even realize that Swerve was still in line to be a number one contender. I mean, this is a guy who recently lost a match that he had a championship shot at for Samoa Joe. And now look, I get it was a three-way, but how do you lose a match? I know you didn't technically get pinned, but how do you lose a match and you're still in that number one contender spot? I just feel like AEW is doing a really poor job of adding to the storylines and helping to progress them, helping to move them forward. Yeah, the wrestling is fantastic. What we're seeing in the ring is great. You know, Will Ospreay is a machine. Will Ospreay and the Will Ospreay Shibata match was fantastic. There's really no story there, though. And the announcers didn't do a good enough job of telling the story that they had before, you know? And there was no video footage of that prior match. You didn't get to see any of that. There was no build to that. You know, that is a really good match that you could get on a New Japan card. And there would be a ton of storyline there, and you'd be like, wow, this is fantastic. But what we got with AEW, this was kind of a throwaway match at the beginning of the night. And yeah, it was a hell of a match, but does it get us any closer to Will Ospreay, Bryan Danielson? I don't think it helped tie anything together. I feel like that story is still where it was at a week prior. And I feel like when you go up and down the card and you look at what we got, it was a lot of the same stuff with not a lot of advancement in storylines and not a lot of stuff getting moved along. And I'm a fan of fantastic wrestling. I love good wrestling, right? I will watch it all day long. But we've talked about this before, and I think you and I are of the same mindset. We want really good wrestling, but we want to be told a story as well. It has to move something along. We have to get somehow from point A to point B. And I don't necessarily care if it takes 6 episodes. I don't necessarily care if it takes 3 episodes. I don't care if it takes 2 episodes. But somehow we have to move the story along. It can't be in the same spot every single week. What happens is you then get bored. You don't pay attention. You're not interested. You end up checking out. Somehow we have to move the story forward. And I don't feel like AEW is doing a good enough job moving these stories forward as we're booking our way to Dynasty, which is only about 3 weeks away, if my math is correct. Am I being too critical of AEW? Are their storylines good enough? And am I just missing the boat? Or do they need to do a better job of helping to push stories forward?
Yeah, it's complicated because they do have some big stars that people want to see. And you're starting to see kind of the reasoning why, but you're not seeing the positioning. You're seeing, okay, Okada and the Young Bucks are positioning themselves as the authority, us versus them. You're seeing Will Ospreay as the star. You're seeing the top angles have some meaning with the establishment, with Swerve Strickland and Samoa Joe in his pursuit. Remember that what WWE does subconsciously is they remind you over and over with the announced team, with vignettes that, oh, let's take a look back. Let's take this. Let's do that. And so they explain some of the stuff that they did. AEW doesn't do it as much. They do it, but they don't do it as crisply, where people that have tuned in that are new wouldn't really understand what's been going on with the dynamic of Swerve Strickland and Samoa Joe. You got to kind of update it, keep it fresh, have constant reminders of why is Swerve Strickland pursuing the title. He had an opportunity and it failed. Oh, there was outside influence. Oh, this is also somebody that came from someplace else and has made a name for himself. So you just got to do a better job of the why. And to me, it has moved away a little bit from the story and the depth of the story, whereas WWE picked it up and then advanced it. So it's a glaring difference. So to me, it's just kind of role reversal, whereas 2 years ago, we were kind of saying the same thing with WWE. And now with AEW, I'm just kind of looking at the matches. I'm enjoying it. I'm kind of understanding that, okay, there's a little bit of acceptance that the storyline is not as deep and as meaningful. So yeah, my investment level is not as high as it could be. But if you're a fan of wrestling and Will Ospreay comes out and has a match, it kind of overtakes a little bit to me the story. I think when you have Okada and you have the Young Bucks and you have Swerve Strickland, there's enough at the top to do some things. The women also have an opportunity to tell their stories. So yes, they need to dig down deep and tell their stories a little more to have more of an investment. But at the same time, House of Black, Julia Hart, they're starting to get more time. Pac, I think every time he comes out there, I think there's intrigue now in building a story there as he pursues a title with Okada, I think would be spectacular. So AEW has work, but if you just appreciate what they're doing, there is a foundation of substance that can be built upon. It needs to be better for the casual fan, but if you're just paying attention to the wrestling and what's happening, it's a smoother show. And for them, 2 hours is perfect because some lulls can get filled out when there's some things that you don't like. And having a DVR is great because you can just fast forward through some stuff that kind of lulls during those television segments with the commercials playing. So in my mind, AEW, yes, it's kind of gone away from what we've known them to be, but they're picking up the pieces with some stars that I think are going to start to tell their stories as this year progresses.
Well, that leads me to this. With Swerve and Samoa Joe, like I said before, I'm not 100% sure how Swerve still has his spot versus Samoa Joe. How is he still challenging for the championship? How is he still the number one contender? I don't feel like AEW has done a good enough job presenting why he's the number one contender. That being said, I don't even know who the number two contender is, which is a bit of a problem. You know, when you look at who is vying for the championship, I've got no idea who's in the number two spot. I have no idea. Like, it was Wardlow because he won a match. And then Wardlow quickly got dispatched and Undisputed Kingdom was again knocked down in the rankings. And then somehow Swerve still hung out at number one after that. I mean, there is nobody else to challenge Samoa Joe. This is all we've got going on. I feel like AEW does a really poor job of booking everybody else. They book the top of the card and then they're just kind of like, we'll throw stuff together. You know, like, I feel like Will Ospreay, who's been on a bit of a tear, and I know he's going up against Bryan Danielson, right? I feel like there should be some talk about him possibly climbing the rankings, because they still do their rankings. They tell you that their rankings are important. I feel like there should be some conversation about him climbing the rankings and kind of where he's at now. He just came in. He started at the bottom, and now he's all the way up into fifth or sixth place. And he has his eyes set on Samoa Joe. He's not there yet, but he's getting there. Big match against Bryan Danielson. This could help catapult him into that challenger realm, where it could be him knocking Swerve out of that first number one contender spot. It could be Will Ospreay, who is the guy who should be challenging Samoa Joe. We don't get any of that. The announcers don't tell you any of that. They don't give you any graphics on the screen. Tony Khan doesn't tell you any of this. Like, these are all things that I feel like should be laid out. Like, I don't really have any interest for this Swerve Samoa Joe match. I've already seen these guys go back and forth a couple of times. I've got zero interest for this. So now you've got 3 weeks to really get me invested in this match again and tell me why Swerve deserves another shot. Look, I think Swerve is fantastic. And I think Swerve has done an incredible job. It's been incredibly organic, him getting over. He's gone from being a heel to being a babyface, and he's done it fantastically. All right? And Samoa Joe, I like him as the champion. But to be honest with you, Swerve probably should have took that title off him at the last pay-per-view, if we're really being honest about this. Right now, Swerve just kind of feels like they're like, well, we don't have anybody else to challenge Samoa Joe, so it's you. You go out there and you challenge him. And look, do I think he'll probably win at Dynasty? Yeah, because how many times can you have the guy lose? I don't know how many times you can have the guy lose. It was an artificial way to extend Samoa Joe's run. It was poorly done. It is what it is. Because Samoa Joe's not out here defending that title, you know? So it's just kind of like, what the hell are we doing here? I have zero interest in this match. Do you have any interest in this championship match? This should be the number one match. This should be the number one thing on your card. And I've got zero interest in this. I much rather watch a Julia Hart Sky Blue match than pay any attention to this. And it's because, look, I'm into Julia Hart. I'm into Sky Blue. I think what they've done with those two characters has been fantastic. Their evolution has been great. Not really into this. Where's your interest for I guess, the top of the AEW card with Samoa Joe and Swerve?
I'm interested because I think Swerve is a very intriguing character. Because I know, we're talking about the casual viewer here that might not know. I do know. He has a strong belief that he said it in a promo, that he has a strong belief he's been mismanaged and that he's a contender and a guy that can be the top of the card, kind of the typical kind of stuff. So he wants to, you know, take over. I think he said it on Dynamite. He said that I'm a performer that can be the top. I have that strong desire to be the best in this business. And I think that that's kind of where it leads to, kind of the natural, like, okay, you have the belt, so I want it kind of thing. And he's over. But yeah, they could do a better job, no doubt about it. And I think that that's where this new hire that has been announced for Tony Khan, I think, can help, but it just hasn't happened yet. It's hard, man. It's hard to have good writers and good production, especially in wrestling, and especially when it's like a little transition period. So I would expect that the storytelling is going to pick up over the next 12 months. It's pretty clear when you see the ratings, someone is going to tell Tony Khan, hey, you know, whether it be Eric Bischoff on a nightly basis on his new podcast.
I was saying Eric Bischoff telling him?
Yeah, or people will tell him, hey, if you don't tell good stories, your ratings will always be 800,000 no matter what you do.
What do you think about that the whole thing with Eric Bischoff? Eric Bischoff has a podcast. Him and his co-host announced that they are not continuing the podcast because Eric Bischoff has a couple things going on right now. It was a really nice post by the co-host, and Tony Khan ends up jumping on Twitter and basically calling Eric Bischoff out. Eric Bischoff ends up responding with some pictures of a half vacant arena from Dynamite, and basically calls out his ratings and says, yeah, okay, well, get back to me when you can raise your ratings up. What do you think about Tony Khan kind of always looking for the smoke and going after guys instead of just letting dead dogs lie?
I think it bit him in the butt because Eric took it and called it a podcast called Wise Choices, where he can just hammer Tony Khan more. Look, in the end, Eric Bischoff has some legs to stand on, but he also has some demons as well because he oversaw, even though a lot of it in his book describes it as stuff that he puts blame on other people regarding just not having the support of management, upper management, when there were some corporate things going on. And I can understand that from a perspective – But at the same token, creatively, he didn't make wise choices with the NWO because he let it grow to be 69 members. And when they were debating the 70 and 71st member, you were like, this guy's in the NWO? It watered down what it meant to be in the greatest faction of all time. So, look, if you watch an Eric Bischoff podcast, you feel informed. You feel like you have somebody with a strong opinion in the world of wrestling. And at the same token, you realize, too, that there is a little bit of bias here at certain points. It is tough, dude. It was actually really interesting that he said that the only reason why that he couldn't do the podcast with John Elbow, Strictly Business, which I loved because it talked about numbers, money, the business side of it, is that he couldn't coordinate his schedule with John's schedule. And then when they wanted to try and get guests, they had to coordinate three different schedules, and Eric's all over the place. So he's like, I just got to do it by myself. And Art, look, the proof's in the pudding. He's a name that has value. People want to listen to what he has to say. And look, in the end, he's just following his own playbook. Controversy creates cash. So he knows what's going on, and Tony Khan knows what's going on. He's calling out Eric Bischoff because he knows Eric Bischoff's going to call him out. So there's a little bit of an element of a shoot that started off, but now is really also has a part work in it too. They're both getting benefits from the attention. And ooh, look, we're talking about it. Everybody loves an online Twitter feud. So good on you, Tony Khan. But my God, dude, get some sleep. 4 o'clock in the morning and you're tweeting? My God.
I feel like that guy lives on coffee and Adderall all day long. Anything else from AEW that really struck your fancy that you liked, that you didn't like? Look, I thought Dynamite was a good show. But again, maybe I'm being too critical. I need a better job with the stories.
Yes, absolutely. I thought Dynamite did a good job. Overall, the Canadians that were in attendance showed out, and Will Ospreay's match was, well, wow. Oh, man. Just watch Will Ospreay, and you'll have a good time watching AEW.
All right. What was your show of the week?
Clearly, I think you and I both are in agreement. Monday Night Raw was the show of the week. By far, absolutely stellar. Top to bottom, and with The Rock destroying Cody, we now have further proof that Cody is being dominated by The Rock, the final boss, that's the real final boss, not the one on AEW that's been portraying himself as that for a couple years, but the final boss is The Rock, in my opinion. Raw is the show of the week.
Yeah, absolutely, Raw is the show of the week. Would you like some news and notes? I've got a short one this week.
Hit me with this week's professional wrestling news and notes. What made your list?
Well, I woke up Wednesday morning to this WWE star stepping away, ? I was shocked. I was like, what is going on here? Well, Ridge Holland had an announcement on NXT that he was stepping away from in-ring competition indefinitely. And I was like, whoa, what is going on here? So we started doing a little bit of research and we started looking around. Holland said during Tuesday night's broadcast that he was doing so because he didn't want to risk hurting himself or anyone else, and it's what's best for his mental health, leading to people questioning whether this was real or a storyline. It has now, however, been confirmed that this segment was entirely part of a WWE storyline. So WWE leaning into real life, where everybody calls out Ridge Holland for hurting people, and Ridge Holland saying that he had some mental issues with this, where the criticism was really taking its effect on him. Bitebull's Corey Brennan reported, the cliff notes of it are Ridge is not going anywhere. It's storyline. It's all part of the larger story that they've been telling for weeks, if not months now, with Ridge in WWE/NXT. They've been building this story up for quite a while. It's quite obvious that it's an important story to Ridge, to Shawn Michaels, and a lot of people have questioned if this storyline is something that has received pushback, whether it's from Ridge or Shawn or anyone else in the back. And I'm honestly surprised to say that there's been zero pushback within NXT. Ridge has actually been a big supporter of the storyline. He was very motivated to do it, to do this storyline for a lot of reasons. So Ridge is on board with the I Hurt People story, which I don't know what that says about Ridge. But whatever, it's all storyline. Ridge isn't going anywhere. Now, is Vince McMahon banned from WWE TV? Well, we may have had a clue on Raw this week. We talked about this a little bit earlier. During the CM Punk Drew McIntyre segment, CM Punk made reference to Vince McMahon asking McIntyre who chose him as the chosen one, basically goading Drew into saying Vince's name. Drew, however, did not. Speaking about the segment on Wrestling Observer Radio, Dave Meltzer noted that some people thought having the unscripted promo wasn't a good idea when McMahon was referenced, as his name is said to have been banned from WWE television. Apparently in the back, when Vince was alluded to, everybody's butthole tightened up real nice. Mm-hmm. Everybody was very quiet and was sitting on pins and needles. Meltzer said it was not scripted word for word, which most things on that show are. They let the guys have free reign. There was one moment where there was a lot of people thinking this might not be a good idea. It was the Vince McMahon reference. One of the things is that Vince McMahon's name is not allowed to be mentioned on TV. But McIntyre changed the focus and never mentioned the name, and they got out of it. They went a little longer. They went a little long, but there was no negativity from it. One person told me that Levesque knew they were probably going to go long, so the matches that didn't have the entrances before the show, they already planned that, and that was going to be the case. So it wasn't that they came up with this to save time. So it sounds like it was all in all, it was very, very good. Drew McIntyre, being the professional that he is, was able to sidestep that, but it did make everybody nervous in the back. And that's going to do it for this week's wrestling news and notes.
Make sure you follow Adam on Twitter at AdamRSTROZ. Follow the network at Detroit Podcast for all wrestling content. Oh my goodness, what a week. Cuz, it's crazy. Next week's episode is episode 311. That's my birthday. We're going to have a fat episode as we preview basically for the show, the two nights of WrestleMania. It's going to be fun to try and coordinate and try to figure that out as we try to coordinate 14 matches and the build-up. So it's going to be a fun time. Man, WrestleMania is here. It's upon us. It's going to be a game changer, and it's going to be a fun two nights, a great weekend in April, and we hope the weather cooperates in Philadelphia. But stay tuned, man. It's going to be go-home shows. It's going to be a week of promotion. You're going to see WWE superstars all over the place, probably on McAfee, probably all over the interwebs. So this week is going to be a special week in the world of professional wrestling. AEW this Sunday has the highlights of the rivalry between The Miz and Daniel Bryan. So that's going to be really interesting as well. Dark Side of the Ring has been really good this season. The upcoming episode is Harley Race. The last couple with Brutus the Barber Beefcake and Buff Bagwell have been stellar. So the content in the ring and outside the ring has been special, as well as the content from the wrestling community, from those in the know, and from the likes of us fans that love professional wrestling. It's a good time to be part of the professional wrestling game. For the jock, Adam Straczynski, I'm the doc, John Macaroon. Stay tuned as we keep rolling along. And next week, we're going to drop our latest and greatest episode of the Doc and Jock Wrestling Podcast.